I huffed in annoyance as my quill continued to scratch its way across yet another insipid fifth-year essay. If I had to read one more sentence equating Wolfsbane potion to a way for werewolves to be less scary, I would set the entire stack on fire. I looked at the clock. It was nearly curfew. Far too late for a student to come knocking unless there was blood involved. And even then it had better be gushing.
Come in.
To my surprise, it wasn't a student, it was Professor Morvan. She was still in her greenhouse robes, dirt smudged and smelling of soil. Her sleeves were pushed up and a few strands of hair had escaped the usually neat prison of her updo as if she had just wrestled a devil's snare into submission. My quill paused mid-critique. Professor, I trust this is important. I have quite a lot of work. It is, she snapped and closed the door behind her. Without invitation, she sat down in the chair opposite me. Then I saw the letter. Expensive parchment marked with the unmistakable red wax seal of the ministry. My stomach dropped rather unpleasantly. Of course she would have received one too, just like every other eligible wizard and witch between the age of 25 and 45. I knew immediately why she was here. It had all started 6 months ago. At first there were only whispers, which had then evolved into headlines, and before long headlines had been forged into legislation. The British Reproductive Enhancement and Enforcement Decree, or BREED for short. A grotesque procreation program posing as patriotism. I saw you get yours at breakfast, she said. Her chin tipped slightly toward my robes where I had stuffed the damned thing hours ago, as if ignoring it would make it cease to exist. My fingers tightened slightly around my quill. How insufferably perceptive. I don't see how my personal business concerns you, Professor. It concerns me because we appear to be in the same predicament. I raised an eyebrow. Pardon? She rolled her eyes. I don't intend to let some pencil pusher at the ministry dictate my life, and I suspect you don't either, she said bluntly. So, instead of rolling the dice and ending up with some half-wit stranger, I thought the most logical course of action would be for you and I to marry each other. I laughed. The kind of mad laugh that escapes before the brain can catch up. I leaned forward and steepled my fingers together as I stared at her. She might as well have suggested I take up divination. You must be joking. I'm entirely serious, she countered. My amusement crawled back down my throat. I'm sure you can find a host of other eligible wizards to enter into a sham marriage, Professor. So why me? Morvan had only been at Hogwarts for 3 years. She was a competent teacher, as far as I could tell, but also nothing more than a distant colleague. I'd hardly call her a friend. In fact, this was the longest conversation we'd ever had. It's not just about finding someone willing, it's about finding someone like-minded. Like-minded. I considered the words in my head as I studied her. She had striking eyes, I noted, with some irritation, the kind that could grow on a person if one allowed them to. And you suppose we are like-minded, do you? She shrugged. I think that we're both rational people who value our independence. I have no interest in uprooting my life for someone who can't wait to turn me into a broodmare. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you also don't strike me as the type of man eager to father a gaggle of children in service to his country. She did have a point. A galling, accurate point. All this time I'd expected the Dark Lord would spare me. After all, I had my hands full keeping my eyes on Potter and Dumbledore. A marriage would surely only complicate matters. But when I had brought my request before him, he had shattered my hopes instantly. He'd praised my magical abilities and insisted that a new generation of powerful wizards was needed, even if they were only of half-blood descent. And so my name had been added to the ministry's list. Eligible. Available. Required. And what makes you think I haven't already found a suitable arrangement? In truth, I hadn't found anyone. I hadn't even looked. The prospect of marriage was too distasteful to even contemplate. She crossed her arms, utterly unimpressed and clearly fed up with my posturing. Well, have you? I picked up the ministry letter and unfolded it. The language was as odious as I remembered, a call to fulfill our patriotic duty, the glorious future of wizard kind, a reminder of the incentives for compliance and the penalties for obstruction. I grimaced and tossed it back toward her. I'm weighing my options. Then consider my proposal another option to weigh, she said, undeterred by my lack of enthusiasm. She would not give up so easily. Very well, let's assume for a moment that our interests are indeed aligned. How do you propose we get around the ministry's scrutiny? Morven gave me a sly, almost conspiratorial smile. We're not exactly without resources here, are we? The ministry's main concern is that we produce a child. As long as we appear to be making an honest effort, they won't look too deeply into our personal lives. At least for now. Charms and potions have come a long way in recent years, and I would assume someone of your skill set would already have several solutions in mind to prevent any unwanted complications. My fingers tapped against the desktop as I mulled it over. She had a point, but still. I'm flattered that you hold my abilities in such high regard, but developing an undetectable potion at such short notice is dangerous, not to mention illegal. But not impossible? She pressed. No, I admitted. Not impossible. We looked at each other without saying a word. This was not a small thing she was proposing. It could land us both in Azkaban if anyone found out. But the alternative was equally bleak. I sighed. I'll think it over. She nodded and stood up. Don't take too long, the clock is ticking. Then she turned on her heel and headed for the door. Morven? She turned back and I opened my mouth, ready to send her off with some scathing remark already poised on the tip of my tongue. Thank you for considering me. The words landed awkwardly between us. Morven looked almost surprised. I wouldn't have if you weren't the best option, she said, pragmatic as ever. And then she was gone. I stared at the spot she had occupied mere moments ago. What in Merlin's name was that? I could have said anything, anything, but my mind had chosen thank you. I pinched the bridge of my nose as if I could physically extract the lapse in judgment from my brain. Thanking her like this was some kind of twisted job interview. It was pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. The next morning I was in the Great Hall earlier than usual, nursing a cup of near-scalding tea. There were only a handful of students here that early, and the staff table was blessedly empty, save for me. I had slept poorly. Dreams of small, sallow-faced children tugging at my robes and calling me father had kept me tossing and turning for most of the night as I had contemplated her ridiculous proposition. It was laughable, yet here I was giving it serious thought, because what else was there to do? The whoosh of a tawny messenger owl interrupted my misery. It deposited the morning's profit into my lap with surgical precision. I flipped it open, more out of habit than interest, and scanned the headlines. The front page was a splash of familiar words. Duty, future, patriotism. Another article on Breed. This one announcing the formation of a new ministry task force dedicated to helping unpaired wizards and witches find suitable matches. My eyes skimmed over the drivel as silent rage flared up inside my chest. I don't know how you can read that tripe, came Morven's familiar voice from behind me. I pointedly ignored her and turned the page with deliberate slowness to make it abundantly clear that I was not interested in continuing this particular conversation. Did you sleep well? She asked. My nostrils flared as I glanced up at her. I always sleep well, I lied. Why wouldn't I? Just wondering, she said cheerfully. I thought maybe you'd been kept up, considering all the options you have to weigh. I reached for my tea to take a desperate sip and immediately regretted it as the hot liquid burnt my tongue. I set the cup down with more force than necessary and cursed inwardly. Morven simply smirked. Careful, she said, though her tone suggested she was anything but concerned. My thoughts were no less caustic than the tea. Is there something you need, Professor? Nothing in particular. Then she took her seat at the far end of the high table. With a huff, I turned my attention back to the Prophet. The remaining news were equally grim. A protest for Muggle-born rights had been brutally squashed. Several prominent pro-Muggle officials had vanished under suspicious circumstances, and there was an opinion piece praising the values of traditional wizarding families. My appetite, already low, disappeared entirely. I got up just as Flitwick entered the hall, annoyingly cheery as ever. He waved. I did not. As I strode past Morven, she looked up as if to speak, but I hurried out the door before she could utter a single word. I vowed to avoid her for the rest of the week. By Wednesday, I had refined the art of evasion into something nearing a professional skill. I adjusted my schedule, my patrol routes, even my mealtimes, but Morven was nothing if not persistent. By Thursday, she had caught on to me. I rounded a corner after my last class and nearly collided with her standing directly in my path. Without missing a beat, I turned on my heel and took the opposite corridor. I convinced myself I was merely proving a point. The point being that I was perfectly capable of making my own decisions without being hounded. That I was not cornered. That I had options. Except all my other options were even more dreadful. The constant letters by desperate witches were worse than her sneaking up on me. The first few had been the usual assortment of women with dubious marital track records, pureblood families seeking to tie themselves to someone in the Dark Lord's inner circle. Then they grew worse. One letter had come from a woman who signed her name with a flourish of hearts, claiming she had been in love with me since her Hogwarts days. She had included a vial of her own blood, so that I might always remember her devotion. Another came from a witch I did not recall ever meeting, who claimed to have divined our compatibility through reading her tea leaves, and was eager to see if our energies aligned in the bedroom. But absolutely none compared to the monstrosity that arrived Friday morning. The owl was a beast of a creature. An abnormally large great grey that thudded onto my plate and sent my toast flying. It carried a scroll bearing an elaborate crest I immediately recognized as belonging to the McLaggans. I should have chucked it straight into the nearest bin, but like a man unable to escape his own impending demise, I broke the seal and unrolled the parchment with a sense of mounting dread. Against all self-preserving instincts, I began to read. Dear Professor Snape, it has come to our attention that you remain unattached under the terms of the BREED, and as such we wish to extend an offer most beneficial to all involved parties. I should have stopped reading right there, but like some perverse academic exercise in human suffering, my eyes kept moving. As a family of proud magical heritage, we have long valued strength, intelligence, and resilience, all qualities that by reputation you possess in abundance. Given the unfortunate lack of suitable matches within our direct family line, we are pleased to propose a most advantageous union between yourself and our esteemed matriarch, Agatha McLaggan. At the age of 44, Agatha remains a woman of robust health and unwavering fortitude, still well within the Ministry's reproductive guidelines. While she has tragically outlived 4 previous husbands, we are confident that a man of your constitution would find himself most agreeable to the arrangement. Our family is willing to cover all expenses, and as a gesture of goodwill, Agatha has agreed to waive her usual requirement of a financial stipend in the event of widowhood. I kept reading, if only out of a morbid sense of curiosity, She eagerly anticipates the opportunity to establish a harmonious marital bond complete with all necessary physical obligations outlined by the ministry. While she is admittedly set in her ways, we are certain that with time and patience you will adapt to her preferences in every aspect of matrimony. I crumpled up the letter and looked up, only to find Morven smirking at me from across the table. Her timing was annoying as ever, but I was past pretending and set the entire bloody thing on fire. The parchment curled and blackened in my hand. Ashes fluttered onto my plate as Morven returned to her eggs, looking infuriatingly smug. By the afternoon, I had reached an undeniable conclusion. I was well and truly backed into a corner. With 3 days to go before the ministry would choose for me, a decision had to be made. And so, when I turned the final corridor leading to the dungeons and found Morven waiting for me yet again, I did not turn and walk the other way. I stopped and with no small amount of venom forced the words she wanted to hear from my mouth. Fine. I'll do it. Morven relaxed visibly. There was no smugness in her expression now. Only quiet relief. We should talk about the details, she said. One would think you'd have it all planned out already. What details do you want to discuss? The sex, for starters. I didn't know it was possible for my soul to shrivel up in mortification, but apparently it could. Must you say it so casually? Yes, she said with infuriating calm. It's important. I grabbed her by the arm and pulled her into the nearest alcove, ignoring a passing student's startled stare. Have you managed to come up with a potion yet? She asked. Of course I have. I lied, knowing full well the half-finished formula sat mocking me back in my office. But it will take time. You have 3 days, Snape. Thank you for the reminder, Morven. She tilted her head, undeterred by my sarcasm. Do you think it will work? Of course it will, I said tightly. It had to if I hoped to survive this farce of an arrangement with any shred of dignity still intact. And you're sure it's undetectable? She pressed on. I narrowed my eyes at her. Are you doubting my abilities all of a sudden? No, she said with a disarming smile, and for a moment my indignation gave way to an altogether undesirable emotion. I looked away. Monday came too quickly. Countless times I had thought about the many ways I might die. Torture, exposure, an excruciating death at the Dark Lord's hands. I had mentally prepared for all of them. What I had not prepared for, however, was this. The ministry waiting room was a miserable airless box reeking of paperwork and despair. The furniture was as drab as the people sitting in it. Couples of all varieties, most looking as wretched as I felt. To my left, a freckled wizard with anxious eyes fidgeted beside a woman who had clearly been crying. Across from me, a squat, balding man was leafing through a pamphlet titled, "So You've Been Assigned a Spouse, a Guide to Patriotic Matrimony," while his new bride stared vacantly into the distance. And then there was the worst of them all. A couple in matching robes. They sat side by side, hands clasped, gazing into each other's eyes like two people who had mistaken this hellish waiting room for the setup of a romance novel. Their robes were embroidered with intertwined initials, some grotesque union of their names, no doubt, and I was viscerally unsettled. Morven noticed them too. Horror crossed her features before she turned to me and muttered, "If you ever suggest matching robes, I'll set you on fire." I almost laughed.
"Snape and Morven."
There was no avoiding it now. Morven stood first, brushing invisible dust from her robes, composed as ever. I, however, lingered for a brief moment longer, as if some last-minute loophole might materialize from the ether. It did not. With all the enthusiasm of a man walking to the gallows, I stood and followed her into the small officiant's office. The clerk didn't even glance up as we approached. Instead, he retrieved a stack of parchment that looked as if it had been copied and recopied since the dawn of time and began droning in a monotone so flat it could have induced sleep in a caffeinated dragon.
Congratulations on your upcoming union. May it bring the magical world strength and prosperity, etc., etc.
She and I exchanged a look. If he had ever recited this phrase with any shred of passion, that time had long since passed.
Right. Let's go over the particulars then.
He picked up the top sheet and began reading with all the enthusiasm of a man dictating his own obituary.
You are here to enter a legally binding marriage under the British Reproductive Enhancement and Enforcement Decree, which stipulates that all eligible wizards and witches of childbearing age must engage in regular scheduled intercourse no less than twice per week.
I clenched my jaw as Morven sat rigid beside me, looking faintly green around the nose.
A compliance spell will be cast at the conclusion of this ceremony. Should either party attempt to evade their conjugal duties, the spell will gradually increase in intensity until compliance is met. Any questions?
I glared at the clerk. By intensity, you mean? He peered at me over the rim of his spectacles, then plucked another sheet from the pile and adjusted his glasses as though he were about to read out the lunch menu.
Symptoms include, but are not limited to, restlessness, hot flashes, increased sensitivity, escalating physical discomfort, and an uncontrollable compulsion to seek out one's spouse for resolution.
Morven let out an exasperated huff. So, what you're saying is that we will be magically coerced into fulfilling our duties, whether we want to or not. The man consulted another document. There was a beat of silence as he flipped lazily through the pages and ran a bony finger down the text. Then, with the same energy as someone confirming the price of dragon dung fertilizer, he said,
"Yes."
Morven muttered something under her breath that sounded distinctly like "fuck me," though I suspected it was not meant as an invitation. The official, entirely unbothered, shuffled his stack of parchment and moved on.
"Now, should no pregnancy occur within the first 6 months of marriage, a formal inquiry will be conducted by the Department of Magical Marriages to assess the cause of reproductive failure."
"And if no cause is found?" He sighed the sigh of a man who had gone through this process one too many times and flipped to yet another page.
"If no cause is determined, couples are given an additional 6 months to conceive. Should failure persist, the ministry reserves the right to intervene with alternative solutions."
I silently counted backward from 10. Alternative solutions, a phrase straight from the fine print of bureaucratic nightmares. Morven's earlier composure had all but evaporated. "What if one of us falls ill?" For the first time, the clerk tilted his head in vague consideration.
"Exceptions are made in the case of severe medical conditions. However, minor ailments, such as a cold, mild hexing, or non-lethal splinching, do not qualify. Temporary discomfort does not exempt one from their marital responsibilities."
I was losing patience. "And if one of us dies?" The man didn't even blink.
"Then the living party will be reassigned to a new spouse."
Morven's entire body jerked backward in silent offense. I, however, felt something entirely different. A sinking, resigned inevitability, as though I had just received the full scope of my own damnation. There was no way out of this but through.
"Now, in order to finalize the bond, you will each take an oath of commitment, which will bind you together under the decree's requirements. Please extend your hands."
Her palm was cold and clammy in mine, her fingers tense as though she were suddenly regretting every decision that had led to this moment. The official raised his wand and pointed it at our joined hands.
"Do you, Severus Snape, and you, Neris Morvan, hereby swear to uphold the conditions of this union under the law, to comply with all requirements set forth,
and to... He droned through a long list of bureaucratic absurdities until it was time to say our part. I do, I muttered. Morvan hesitated, then took a deep breath and looked me resolutely in the eyes. I do. A pulse of magic shot through our clasped hands, and just like that, we were married.
Congratulations,
the official said with all the enthusiasm of a damp dishcloth and shoved another stack of parchment in our direction.
Sign here, here, and here.
Morvan signed with swift, precise strokes while I scrawled my signature with the zest of a man signing his own execution order.
Initial here and here. Excellent. You may now proceed with all state-mandated spousal duties.
He rifled through his desk drawers with the speed of a slug before retrieving a stack of brochures. Morvan picked up the top pamphlet. The title, in offensively bold lettering, read, The Ministry's Guide to Navigating Your New Magical Union. She flipped to a random page and her face twisted in barely concealed horror. Without a word, she passed it to me. I skimmed the section title. First Night Jitters. How to Overcome Awkwardness in the Bedroom. There was an illustration beneath it. It moved. I shut the brochure so fast I nearly took off my fingers. Morvan had already fished out a second pamphlet titled Mandatory Matrimony Strengthening the Wizarding World One Happy Couple at a Time. She held it up between two fingers as if it might sprout legs and scamper away. I'd rather be eaten by a letherfold, she whispered. I would have agreed, but the clerk was already pushing more materials at us.
These will answer any further questions you may have. In here, you'll find the full index of ministry-approved fertility potions, an FAQ regarding spell-induced arousal side effects, and of course, your conjugal log.
I did not react. I refused to react. Morvan, however, made a noise of pure existential suffering. Our what?
Your conjugal log. You are required to record the dates and times of all completions.
The man slid the booklet toward her. I nearly apparated out of my own skin, but he continued, undeterred.
You'll need to submit this to the Department of Magical Marriages at the end of each month for verification.
I stared at it as she flipped through it. It was worse than I could have ever imagined. It had bloody checkboxes titled Successful, Partial Completion, whatever that meant, and Attempted but Incomplete. Morvan managed to speak first. This is a joke, right? The clerk blinked.
On the contrary, this is standard ministry procedure.
She swept the stack of brochures into her bag and stood. Are we finished?
Just about.
The clerk waved his wand over a final sheet of parchment.
I've sent your marriage record to the appropriate departments. Your first compliance entry will be expected within, 12 hours.
I froze, and so did she. 12? She repeated numbly. The clerk nodded.
Consummation of the marriage must occur within 12 hours to fully activate the bond and confirm compliance.
I barely heard him over the roaring in my ears. The man seemed to sense our rapidly approaching breakdowns and quickly ushered us out of his office.
That will be all. Good luck, and may your union be fruitful.
We made our way back into the atrium. I suppose that means we need to schedule something. The way she said it, like we were arranging a bloody faculty meeting, was almost laughable. I crossed my arms. Fine. When? She glanced at the giant ministry clock. After dinner? I nodded curtly. Where? Morvan hesitated. Your quarters? I nodded again. Fine. Right. That's sorted then. Yes, I replied. Sorted. She nodded. I nodded. And then we apparated back, no longer as colleagues but husband and wife. The walk back up to Hogwarts was the longest walk of my life, and I breathed a sigh of relief when I could finally retreat back to my dungeon quarters. Instead of dinner, I opted for a stiff drink to settle my nerves. The logical part of my mind knew that I was being unnecessarily apprehensive. I'd had plenty of meaningless sex before. And yet, I sat in my armchair for a full 20 minutes just staring at the wall. This was different. Not because of any misplaced sentiment, but because of the sheer absurdity of it all. A government-mandated consummation under threat of prosecution. If I had read of such a thing in a novel, I would have dismissed it as a cheap plot device. I got to my feet. Maybe a shower would settle my nerves. Steam rose around me as the hot water slowly but surely drove the tension from my shoulders. But my mind remained stubbornly on edge. What would it be like? My fingers twitched against the tiles. This was a necessity, nothing more, a contractual obligation wrapped in flesh and heat. And yet, I glanced down and cursed under my breath, then turned the water to cold. Twenty minutes later, I was pacing my chambers, just as restless as before. This was ridiculous. I had faced so much worse, lied to the Dark Lord's face countless times and walked away with my life, and yet here I was, staring at my bed as if it were an executioner's block. With a muttered curse, I flicked my wand. The bed straightened itself. I paused. Was that too prepared? I flicked my wand again and the sheets crumpled slightly. No, that looked worse. As if I had fussed over it. Which, of course, I had, and the very thought of that made my eye twitch. Another flick of my wand. The blankets smoothed themselves out once more. I ran a hand through my damp hair. Merlin's balls, this was pathetic. I retreated back into my chair while my mind circled the same infuriating question I'd tried to avoid up until now. What would it be like? For the first time, I found myself looking at Morven as something other than a colleague. It was deeply inconvenient, because she was attractive, not in a way that was obvious, like the kind of beauty that so many men tripped over themselves for. She wasn't soft and demure and charming, she was sharp and competent and unshakable. It would be one thing if she were unpleasant or afraid of me. But she was not. She was completely unbothered by me in a way most people were not, and that made it worse. Because I had never been drawn to softness. I had no patience for it. I shoved the thought away. This was not attraction. This was not even interest. The mind was a fickle thing with a tendency to latch onto things when presented with no other options, and I wouldn't let it wander down this path. I knew where that road led. How easy it was to slip into something like attachment when one wasn't vigilant. I stood abruptly and began pacing the length of my chambers again with the single-minded determination of a man attempting to outwalk his own thoughts. I made it exactly 3 steps before I caught sight of my bed again. I stopped and stared at it. It felt like the damn thing was mocking me. It was no longer just a bed. It was a stage for a soon-to-be crime scene of ministry-sanctioned lunacy. I crossed my arms, then uncrossed them. Then crossed them again. This was madness, absolute, unmitigated madness. I would not think about it. I would not picture what she might look like, and I would certainly not entertain the idea of her in my bed. I would... Merlin, help me.